Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to the Athletic Baseball Show for Monday, August 28th. This is On Deck. I'm Stephen Nesbitt, and this is not Levi Weaver. I am joined today by Zach Meisel. Levi Weaver is away, and Zach was nice enough to fill in, pinch hit here. Zach, how are you doing tonight?
I feel like I have to be so much more creative and artistic. These are big shoes to fill.
These are very big shoes to fill. Levi, we hope you have a great time away, well-deserved PTO, and I want to give some credit. Levi made the bold prediction entering the weekend that the Mariners would be the team coming out of the weekend ahead on the AL West, and indeed, I believe for the first time this season, maybe early April it was not the case, but Mariners first place, one game up on Texas and Houston. So there you have it. My bet was wrong. Levi's was right. Always follow that man. Zach, on today's show, we're going to talk about a little about Tito Francona's future. We're going to consider the Orioles closer situation, which got a lot cloudier after an injury to Felix Bautista. We'll preview our favorite series of the week, and we're going to make our Homer Chase picks. So we have our Guardians expert here, Zach. So the Guardians punted at the trade deadline. Right, they were theoretically in range of the Minnesota Twins and basically said this is not a smart bet for us to go all in on this team. However, Tito Francona's managerial future very much still up in the air. He is at, as of tonight, 1,936 career wins. One more year would probably get him to 2,000, which only 12 managers have ever done. What is the latest with Tito? Is this it for him?
I think it is, unless there's a crazy sudden last minute change of heart. And it happened pretty suddenly, too. I think on one hand, this is something he's pondered for the last couple of years, and it's something the organization has at least had to consider. They've kind of taken this year by year. He missed part of the 2020 season. He missed part of the 2021 season. He admitted during the 22 season that it was difficult. You know, he's had stomach procedures, he's had blood clots, he's had really scary stints in the ICU. And the thing that's bugged him a lot just on a day-to-day basis the last few years is his foot. He had foot operation, he's on crutches for a while, in the boot. You can see ice wrapped around his foot and his ankle every night after a game. So I think the day-to-day wear and tear has taken a toll on him. And I mean, he's 64 years old, but I think he would even tell you he's an old 64. And it's his 11th season in Cleveland. That's three more than he spent in Boston, even though those years in Boston, I think, age you maybe twice as quick. But he's the longest tenured manager in franchise history. This is a franchise that dates back to 1901. So it's a long time for anybody. And I think for the first time this season, this summer, he was pondering his future and maybe doing so more seriously than before, where last year he admitted, like, I wonder what comes next. And this year it's more, I wonder if whatever comes next is coming soon.
Looking from afar, it's a shame to see this news and the way you laid it out earlier this week. I encourage everyone to go read about it. Was so clear-headed and hinted, I think, very strongly the way that Tito has been hinting himself. And it's a shame because he's been such a fixture and such a character in this game for years. This is a guy who, as soon as I needed anything, Ben Charrington got hired by the Pirates and someone said, hey, call Tito. He's got, you know, a great look at both sides of this. He knows the Pittsburgh area well, and he knows Ben Charrington well from his Boston days. Give him a call, and he was so happy to talk. And he's one of those guys. You can pick up the phone and catch him in the offseason, and he's not bothered. He's been such an important manager for the last generation here. And it's a shame to see him go, but you see it laid out, and you're like, yeah, it kind of makes sense. It might just be the right time for him.
You really get a sense of what he means to the sport, especially when we're on the road and we're at Yankee Stadium and he's in his office pregame. He doesn't have a free second. There is always someone walking into his office, whether it's a New York writer, a broadcaster, someone who used to play for the Yankees, or someone with MLB. He knows everybody. He makes so many connections and builds relationships. It's what makes him successful at his job in the first place. But I think losing that, you know, I think that's why this is really, it's not just a Cleveland story. It is a league-wide story, just one of the real good ambassadors of the game. You know, he's always got a quick, funny one-liner. He's always been a player's manager who's never going to disparage one of his guys publicly. It's weird for Cleveland. You know, I think it's difficult to imagine what life after him is like because it's been so long since anyone's had to reminisce about the Manny Acta days in Cleveland. But just in terms of baseball itself, I mean, this is, you mentioned the win total. There are 12 people ahead of him all time. Of those 12, two are active, Dusty Baker and Bruce Bochy, and the other 10, they're in the Hall of Fame. So it's pretty good company. It's a good reminder of what he has accomplished and kind of the, just the company he keeps.
So on to a team that probably will be in the postseason, certainly will at this point. The Baltimore Orioles got a real shock this weekend when Felix Bautista went to the injured list with, technically, I think they're saying elbow discomfort, but GM Mike Elias said it's a UCL injury of some sort, and they have not ruled him out so far for the rest of the season and the postseason, but, you know, the writing on the wall for that type of injury says he's got to shut down, he's got to ramp back up. And so this is tough news. It's hard to overstate the importance of Bautista to this Orioles team. He's got a 1.48 ERA, 33 saves. I'd have to find it here, but he's like at 110 strikeouts or something. Yeah, 110 or so in 61 innings. I know this because I was looking up for a story last week. I talked to some guys about 100 strikeout relievers. I didn't realize that was like a thing for guys. So get to 100. And one reliever said, the guy in Baltimore is just making a mockery of that. It's mid-August and he's already got 100. So he's special. And now they turn to a bullpen that suddenly, I think, is handcuffed a bit. Because before this, you had the opportunity to use Yennier Cano as a setup man in sort of different roles that we've seen in the past be extremely successful, including in Cleveland. In the postseason, you need guys like that. And now I feel like they're a little bit more tied into a more conventional structure because they need Cano to close in the ninth.
So first of all, you may know the answer to this. I prepared a little game for you. But if you already did research recently for a story, then I don't know if you might be too smart for this. But he was on pace for about 130, 135 strikeouts, which is, that number seemed fake to me almost. So I looked up, did the last 30 years, how many relievers have had that many strikeouts in a season? A couple guys have done it multiple times, but the names ahead of Bautista on this list, assuming he would have finished at somewhere in that range, 130, 135, there are only five guys in the last 30 years. Can you name any of the five, all of the five?
The one I know I can name is Josh Hader, because I think he had 143. I saw that the other day. Other than that, boy, I'm gonna have some trouble. Is Chapman up there?
So what's a number that would just blow your mind?
Well, because these guys only pitch 60 or 70 innings a year. And so if you're in 130, that's already absurd to me. Like at 140, you're probably striking at like 40% of guys at that point. That's truly bonkers.
So all anyone is going to remember Brad Lidge for is the Albert Pujols home run. But in 2004, he struck out 157.
We need to talk more about Brad. How many innings do you know?
94, which is...
Wow.
I think he was probably on fumes there at the end. But that's 80 appearances, 190 ERA. I mean, that's like one of the greatest relief seasons ever. Right? Hader's on the list twice. Eric Gagne is on the list, which shouldn't come as a surprise. That guy for 3 years was as dominant as they come. Dellin Betances, he struck out in 2014. He struck out 135 in 90 innings with a 140 ERA. The next year, 131 strikeouts in 84 innings with a 150 ERA. And in 2016, he slacked a little bit, only 126. I mean, that's a three-year run. That's incredible. There's one other name. I don't know why you would get this, so I'll just say it. Carlos Marmol.
Whoa.
Remember him?
Yeah. Didn't have that one.
2010 Cubs, 77 innings, 138 strikeouts.
What was that guy doing? That's crazy.
And that's the list. So yeah, losing Bautista is pretty big. And I've covered Terry Francona in Cleveland for a long time. 2016, the way he deployed Andrew Miller and Cody Allen in the playoffs was, I mean, people said it was revolutionary at the time. you know, you needed both of them, right? And I think you it helps when you have Bautista and Cano. So if you need to bring one of them in the sixth inning to get out of a jam and they pitch the seventh, you know, you still have that other guy back there. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. Bautista was kind of reminding me of Miller a little bit, just in terms of the numbers. And then I looked it up, and Miller in 2016 had a strikeout to walk ratio of 123-9. Bautista, the walk rate's a little higher, but yeah, they're going to be interesting to watch. That felt like a key spot on their roster where they need everybody healthy.
One note on Marmol, that I'm looking at it. He had most years he was in the 11, 12 strikeouts per nine range, which is great. That 2010 year, 15.99, just complete outlier. Yeah, that's crazy. He ran walk rates that were crazy, like 6 and 7 per nine innings. But anyway, good for Carlos Marmol. He gets mentioned on the pod. That was unexpected. But you're right. The Baltimore situation, before we move on, Danny Colom is going to be okay in the setup role. But now Shintaro Fujinami, who's been better since he's been in Baltimore, but still extremely problematic, erratic command, too many walks. He is not someone you're going to trust in big innings in the postseason. I just don't think you can. You're not going to bring him in with two guys, right, and two outs. Like, you're too concerned he's going to walk somebody or give up big hit. So they are handcuffed, like I said earlier. So this will be interesting to watch.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We are going to move on to our series of the week. Zach, go first. What's your favorite series of the week to watch?
All right, I've seen enough of the AL Central. So even though it's technically the battle for first place, I guess, I'm going to bail on the Guardians and the Twins there in at Target Field. I do want to mention the Braves in Colorado. I just want to watch that offense in thin air. But I'll go Angels Phillies, and it's kind of twisted, but I just, the Angels are a car crash. I can't look away. You know, you could bill it as Shohei Ohtani. Could he pitch to Bryce Harper? And then you realize that one just had UCL surgery and is still kind of finding his way back, and the other is probably going to need UCL surgery at some point. So it's very disappointing. Still two all galaxy talents and fun watching them both hit, but I don't know. Maybe could it be Mickey Moniak's homecoming? Would that get you interested in Angels Phillies in late August?
Sell out, baby.
Former number one overall pick in 2016. Had a cup of coffee for a few years in Philly. And I don't know, you could call this a breakout season for him with the Angels. 800 OPS. Don't look at the strikeout to walk ratio. It's 103-9. But I just can't stop watching the Angels, even as the rest of the AL West is so much more interesting now. I can't help but to check in on what they're doing every night, because it's a dumpster fire and it's fascinating.
The people coming out for Logan Ohapi and Mickey Moniak. That's what this is going to be all about. Yeah, you're right. And it was like the obituary had already been written on this Angels team before Ohtani got injured. And then it just suddenly is like, well, now we're thinking about his future. You and I both jumped in to the middle of that fray after he got injured, and we're tracking people down and writing about it. So a lot to watch there for the next month, because he's got to make some decisions on the personal level of what he wants to do and how he wants to handle his own situation before he heads into free agency, and how careful and protective he wants to be. And the Angels need to try to, I guess, play out the string in a way that doesn't alienate him whatsoever, so they have a chance to re-sign him if they think they do. So this is a weird team to watch, but an interesting one.
Someone's going to write a book one day on just like this 10-year period of the Angels, and how you could have these two generational talents we've never seen before, and how it went awry year after year after year. I don't know if that book would sell all that well, because it would be such a miserable read, but it'd be so interesting.
They'll end up getting rid of both of those guys in the Winter World Series 2 years later with like Mickey Moniak as the star. So that'll be the happy ending. I actually switched up my favorite series at the last minute. I was going to go Cincinnati and San Francisco, but they just had such clunkers of weekend that even though they are the next teams up in the wild card race, I'm gonna let that one pass and go with Milwaukee at Wrigley. Four gamer, I believe it is. No, I'm sorry, they're four games up. I misread my notes. Four games up on the Cubs. The Brewers have won 8 games in a row. The Cubs are 7-3 in their last 10. This is going to be a great one. Was just checking in on the Cubs over the weekend. Ian Happ has been great. Cody Bellinger has been great. Seiya Suzuki is figuring some things out, and they needed that to happen. They had shut him down for a little, I guess rested him for a little bit at one point just to try to get his bat right. He was giving a little bit of average, but not so much in the thump category, and he's coming around on that. The Brewers, we've talked about at length, they're carried by the rotation. And in this series, they don't even have their top three going, but it's Wade Miley against Jameson Taillon, Corbin Burns against Justin Steele, Brandon Woodruff against Kyle Hendricks. These are just classic NL Central names going up against each other every year. And that's going to be my series to watch, because there is still time for serious movement here in the NL Central. Milwaukee is doing what it can to run away with it. The Cubs are not letting them. The Reds are trying to stick around. And if not the division lead, we're talking about wildcard teams here. So that's going to be my one to watch. So a couple honorable mentions here. I would put Cincinnati and San Francisco in that category. Houston and Boston. Houston now not even in second place. I think they're tied for second, actually. So it's a scary place to be in the wild card standings and in wild card position. And so Houston, as good as we know this team is, and as much as we believe they're going to be there in the end, they got to keep going. They got to keep the pedal down. And series against Boston is a pretty big one. And then the Diamondbacks are going to be going to Los Angeles. I want to keep an eye on that one because the Diamondbacks just won 3 of 4 from Cincinnati. That's a team that will not catch the Dodgers for first place, but can really make noise in a wild card position. And the last one, very last one to throw out there, is the Battle of Florida. Tampa Bay and Miami, just a two-gamer, but if you just saw what happened over the weekend with the Yankees and the Rays, Randy Arozarena gets hit by Albert Abreu, a bunch of other guys get hit, benches clearing a couple times, Yandy Diaz got injured, his forearm on I think it was Jonathan Loaiza, a good pitch. The Rays have fallen off in a big way since the start of the year, but they are still a very dangerous team. And with a lineup, I think they can figure it out. And despite losing, 4 starting pitchers for long-term injuries, they're still very, very well positioned. Moving on, it is time for the On Deck Arcade. This is where we check in on our arms race and homer chase results from the past week. And it was interesting. Arms race. Let's jump right in. So Levi's pick was Kyle Bradish. He didn't know who they were when he was throwing or who against, and he's very confident because he's absolutely dominating me in this. And Bradish did well. 6 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, 0 homers, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts against Colorado for a 64 game score 2.0, which the good listener knows is how we judge these, game score 2.0. And Gerrit Cole, I finally cashed in my Yankees option here. He was originally slated to go Thursday against the Nats. I felt really good about them. By the time he actually went, it was Friday against the Rays. Didn't feel good about that. However, he put down 7.2 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs, 1 earned, 1 homer, 0 walks, 11 strikeouts, 79 games for 2.0. I get to take this one home, and I was feeling very good about myself because you don't want to pick the wrong Gerrit Cole start. And the previous one he'd gone out there, that was the wrong one. So I felt good about that. I felt very good. So now onto the part that Zach gets to actually participate in. Zach, we have had another change in score here. Homer chase. You pick a guy for every week. You add up their home runs for the week. We got a season-long game going. Levi picked Kyber Ruiz, which was, I didn't have him anywhere on my list of guys to pick. Kaber is having a pretty good season. However, he put up 0 homers this week, as I kind of expected he might. I picked Jorge Soler. He gave me 3 of them, so I am now up 24-22. And so it comes to you, Zach, to help Levi out here and make a pick that is going to help turn things around as he heads into the last month of the season. Who is your homer chase pick?
This is going to be important. I think Levi is going to owe me a nice dinner at the end of the year, because I'm going to go Max Kepler. He's been hitting the ball a lot better lately. OPS of about 1050 for the last 3 weeks. 22 career home runs against Cleveland is most against any team, and that includes 2 or more in 7 of the last 8 seasons. He's going to get a righty, right-handed starting pitcher, all 3 all games have, yeah, in that series against Cleveland to start the week, which will help. Then they go to Texas. Texas has been struggling lately, so I think Kepler will keep it going. Multiple hits in 4 of his last 5 starts. He's just playing a lot better. He's facing a team that he always seems to crush. And also, you know, I don't need him to go have 12 hits this week. I just need him to hit home runs. That's his game. So Max Kepler, I think he's going to hit 2 and at least, I don't know, maybe pull into a tie with you, unless your guy has a nice week too. Who do you got?
So I actually overthought things with the Twins a couple weeks ago. I went with Matt Wallner. He had just come off a walk-off, and I went with him. I think he went over. Actually, he gave me one, so it wasn't horrible, but you just go with the guy who just hits homers. I mean, just do it. This is the game, right? Understand the game. So this week, I actually credit to myself for saving some of these good teams for late in the season because I'm finally able to, once again, cash in an easy ticket. I'm going with a Braves guy. They go at Colorado, at Dodgers. Levi burned the Braves early in the season, like fourth week of the season. We went with Ronald Acuna and got a big old one. And so I could pick from Matt Olson. He has 43 homers. Austin Riley has 30. Acuna, Albies, Ozuna all have 28. I'm going to not get too tricky here. I'm going Matt Olson, who's going to give me at least two homers this week. If he doesn't hit a couple into the thin air in Colorado, I don't know what he's doing. He's in good shape, and I think I'm going to extend this lead. Zach, thank you for joining us. Thank to the listener for listening. Thanks to Brian for producing today's show. You can find our work all week long at theathletic.com. We have a new sale starting on Monday. Subscribe to The Athletic for $1 per month for the first year at theathletic.com/baseballshow. Sign up for The Windup, The Athletic's daily baseball newsletter with Levi once he's back, and Ken Rosenthal for absolutely free. Coming up next in your feed, Starkville, Joe Madden. Hey, there's a good one. Joe Madden joins Jason Stark and Ken Rosenthal, and you know some Shohei Ohtani talk is coming from a guy who knows him well. Give us a follow on Twitter. Zach is at Zach Meisel, and I'm at Stephen J. Nesbitt. Levi and I will be back on Thursday with more of What's on Deck.